laws. Yet not everyone is treated equally. The ACLU is leading the fight to protect our civil liberties. Learn how at myaclu.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting at 107.3 FM and 90.1 FM. Yeah. And over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock. It's a Tuesday. It's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Oh, yeah. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yo.
You know, it's supposed to storm. It's supposed to get some really, really serious storms. And I don't see anything happening. In fact, it was supposed to start last night. And then they said today, you know, up to 6 inches of rain in some places, at least 2. I haven't seen nary a drop.
Are you feeling storm deprived?
I am. I like a good storm. I never used the word nary in a sentence before either.
Well placed, yeah. I don't know. It feels like it's very dry, but it wants to just be a deluge, but it's not quite there yet. Like, I saw the wind moving around. It's like sort of threatening it a little, but yeah, maybe later, or maybe it just went around.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that. How can we help it rain? I know patience. About rain dances. What?
You have to have patience. It'll happen.
Kyle, I have so much patience. It's ridiculous.
It would be nice.
I'm waiting so patiently for so many things to happen that it never happens. And I still remain patient. But one day, Kyle, one day, my patience will run out. Yeah. Was that thunder? No. Okay. It's going to rain, folks. At some point, it's going to rain. They say it's going to rain today. I don't know. I don't know. It's raining in some places, too, so maybe you want to go to where it's raining. But if you like rain, I guess, you know, nobody really likes rain. I like rain. I'm weird in that way. I like storms. I like rain. I like winter. You know, I like the metric system. I don't belong, do I? Well, that's just how it is.
You're an individual.
That's a nice way of saying it. Okay, good things happening out east. Out east is really a cool place in many ways.
I always feel that way. I mean, I'm really kind of new to the area, but I always... There's always something new to explore, and it's an interesting place.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you got the Hamptons, you got all kinds of rich people out there. I'm talking about, you know, beyond that, where actual real people exist, and they live their daily lives, and they live there over the winter. And, you know, North Fork as well as South Fork. There's a lot going on out there. There's Greenport, there's Orient, there's Manitouk, there's Cutchogue. Yeah, I'm not just making words up. Those are real places.
Yeah, I like the mix of agrarian and maritime. You know, there's a lot of fishing and boating, of course, because of the proximity of the water.
They have fish. There's fish, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a really cool place to just hang around and just, I don't know, like you're pointing out, those little known areas, but yeah.
They have vineyards where they...
Well, yeah, I mean, those are kind of an attraction. It's like a whole...
It's turned into that, yes, that's true.
Right, yeah, it's like a green belt, I guess, a vine belt.
Yeah, sorts. They just grow wine out there.
Uh-huh. A real attraction, but there's plenty of good places. Just go find a good cup of coffee and you'll have an array of options.
Yes, if you find a good cup of coffee, that makes your day right there. Don't let anybody tell you that the Hamptons are not for you. They're for everybody, and there's lots of cool people out there.
Well, and the parks, natural beauty, a lot of, like I said, shore access, mm-hmm. being able to be on the water or at a beach. Montauk, of course.
Open space.
Renowned. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess it's a busy time out there, so what kind of story you got?
Well,
what are we talking here?
This is about plastic, you know, single-use plastic, from this...
Not my fault.
No, it's not. I wasn't necessarily blaming you, but from this Newsday article, they say that plastic fork or handful of ketchup packets... I saw you grab a handful of ketchup packets today, in fact.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, occasionally I grab
it came
ketchup
up.
Packets...
It was the first line of the story. Well, there's no other way to do it. How do you get ketchup, you know, from a takeout place? How do you do that? You have to have it in something. You can't just hand it to you in a little cup, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into too many details, but
if there are any school kids out there right now that, you know, work on solving that problem and you'll win like the Pulitzer or something.
I mean, some places have it out. Some places you have to like ask. Sometimes it's just sort of... It's there, but it's not really where, you know, most people get things like packets of sugar, but it's still available. I don't know.
Make your own ketchup.
I'm navigating things, and I'm presuming it's, you know, mm-hmm. something if I needed like some serviettes.
Do you remember during the pandemic, we collected ketchup packets? We couldn't stop it from coming. They kept giving it to us, these various places that we would go. You know, to do this like hostage exchange of food where, you know, they would like put it in the isolation room and then we come in and get it and everybody be wearing masks. And it was a special time, but we had lots of ketchup packets and for some reason we saved them all. And it was like a full shopping bag after about a year of that.
Yeah.
That was, you know, we probably could have gone to the Guinness Book of Records for that. I think that would have been something.
But it was strange because we were accumulating all of this one-time use stuff, mm-hmm. and I have a feeling that's what this story's about. And it was forever afterwards something that it just felt gross. Like it's, you really kind of despise all the packaging. Like, okay, takeaway food's neat. It's a fun way to not have to do a lot of meal prep yourself, and we're a busy society. But with all of, the cost of some of the most innovative recycled and compostable utensils and stuff just does not seem to be matching the availability of all the plastic stuff. And yeah, that I guess goes right along with these packets, which at the time it just seemed like everyone was just throwing them at you as like, I don't know. In case of emergency, you'll have an extra 10 packets of ketchup. It was just that I think it was everybody. It was coming from a place of love, you know.
I don't know.
They were looking
that
out for humanity at the time in ways maybe we aren't now because we're concerned about the bottom line. But
didn't ask for ketchup. Didn't want ketchup.
It wasn't really the type of stuff you want to keep around.
No.
And so then you have the dilemma of what do I do with like a shopping bag full of ketchup along with like two, you know, maybe a garbage bag full of plastic utensils.
Oh yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, that stuff accumulates. And what if you don't even open them and they've got like the salt and the pepper and the napkins
in another plastic like bag or four. They're in a plastic and you get a napkin. That's useful. You can use the napkin. It's tiny, but you can use it.
Yeah. But if you open it and you use one thing, then okay. Do you go back and you this is what the cost at a certain point, I think we just stopped asking, like saying, please do not give us this stuff or just no, we don't need that, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people have these kinds of aversions, or I don't know if it's a quasi like traumatic thing from having had so much awkward takeout moments in that period, but it made no sense, or it made perfect sense that it was absurd. Like, uh-huh. What is the logic behind accumulating all this stuff? Something's wrong with this. Backwards.
Again, it's
it magnified it.
I think it's us being misfits because most people probably like that. Most people probably ask for it, you know, and we're the ones that don't like that and don't want it.
Yes, and we're depriving the landfill industry of precious methane and leachate.
There is an argument for that, and some people out there will make that argument. Yes.
Okay.
We are depriving the landfills and the forever chemicals and all that.
Okay. So where did this end up?
We didn't even get through the first sentence of this story. This is the theme of the show, by the way.
Okay.
People listening for the first time, we have all these stories, a whole lot of them, and we never get past the first sentence of any of them.
You know what? I'll just be quiet obviously the point of radio is to be quiet. So just let me.
Listeners, I'm gonna go over here. You be quiet. Listen, we're speaking. No, I'm kidding. I didn't mean that. We just lost. Did you see that?
That was a little harsh.
We can see our listeners.
I mean, especially from you, because you're kind of, you're just not ether. Like
that. Yeah, you can tell. You can tell when listeners
disappear. All right, is everybody calm?
All right, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. That was just, look.
Look, we're 13 minutes in.
It's not as bad as what Trump did over the weekend. Did you see that? The correspondence dinner, I didn't know they were doing this, but they rescheduled it. Nobody knew about it. They told him.
I didn't.
It was on Friday. It was at a different hotel, smaller hotel, and it was something.
I saw him wearing that stupid hat at one point. I was like, okay, this isn't for me.
Trump 2028.
Nope, sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, he gave a 1-hour speech, and it was awful because it was basically the same thing he's always saying. You know, basically his gripes and hatred and all that. In the past, these correspondence dinners have been, you know, good-hearted between the president and the press that, you know, is constantly making life difficult for the president. You know, when you see clips of those old events, you realize even George W. Bush had a sense of humor and didn't take himself nearly as seriously as this idiot does. And that kind of, you know, made you feel a little bit better about the world we were living in, even though I know there's an argument for, like, this shouldn't even happen in the first place. And I get that because, you know, you made a very good analogy earlier in the day about a true reporter that would never be welcome in that particular forum, would never be caught dead making jokes about the president and being all good-natured and all that kind of thing.
Okay,
I don't recall the name.
Absolutely. This whole thing, like, I have some thoughts about it. And I just because it wasn't for me at that moment, or, you know, it's there's a lot of things to it. But what came to mind when we were kind of thinking about it in conversation was Amy Goodman would not be in that room.
No. And no, she would not be welcome in that room because
she'd be outside, you know, good, real, independent journalist mm-hmm. would not be hobnobbing in sort of like a careerist environment for institutions that themselves have been in turmoil and aren't as staid. I mean, the credibility over consolidation and ownership alone really, I mean, makes you question how meaningful this stuff is on a resume, I guess. I get, I mean, for some people, it's the pathway for, you know, the lifestyle they want, but you're really kind of blind to the potential for taint, to become tainted.
Right.
Yeah. And integrity and your scruples as a reporter have everything to do with that. And people like Amy Goodman wouldn't do that. They would be outside, or they would be out in the line on the way in asking hard questions.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, as they're walking in or across the street at the protest, talking about why the people that did want to ask questions weren't allowed in.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a different style, but it's that independence that people should really think of when they think of real journalism.
But here's the thing, you know, I think she would annoy the elected officials that were there, but she would also annoy the press that were there, because they just want to have a good time that night and, you know, turn it off. And the thing with Amy is she doesn't turn it off. She's always on duty. She's always going to be asking these hard-hitting questions. She's always going to be a pain in the ass to anybody who is in control or imagines themselves in control. And that is what journalism truly is. And if you can handle that, then you might be able to have an interesting night together, as long as you realize that she's never off duty. It reminds me, you know, I went to a hacker conference many years ago, there were people of all different kinds giving talks, including people who were part of the FBI. And at one point, like 2 days into the conference, it was in a hotel, one of the speakers got arrested by the FBI. In fact, the same person that gave a talk. And that's when it became clear, these guys are never off duty. You know, they might be at a conference, they might be giving a talk, but they're still on duty, and they will still bust somebody if they feel they have that right, and that, you know, right is on their side and all that kind of thing. Same thing here. Same thing here with journalists. A good journalist is never off duty. Now, you know, they've given themselves a lot of credit for the first correspondence dinner where the shooter ran through the hallway and everybody then was suddenly on duty. Okay, great. But you weren't on duty before then. When something happened, okay, fine. You all, you know, ran across town to the press conference that Trump was giving at the White House and asked questions. But it's not really the same thing as what somebody who never turns it off, you know, is all about.
Absolutely. I mean, the reporting, I'm not discrediting at all the kind of hard-hitting stuff. And I think it's really the integrity of that institution, the press club, that's at stake, that they're putting people that were doing serious journalism, putting them in a position where they have to share the space like that and like, I don't know, shake hands and stuff. It just seems like it takes away. I mean, it maybe is an opportunity for those journalists. I don't know what their line of thought is, but it seems like it puts them in a position where they shouldn't have to, their work should speak for itself. They shouldn't have to sit there and glad hand with him at all.
Well,
like that, and that seems like a relic of what they think their institution is, and seems self-serving that, oh, well, we have to do it. We're going to go back to our core, you know, historical, way of doing things, which is with the president. And that's a great achievement, but it seems dated in this moment because of the kinds of reporting and awards that were given out.
He has called the press the enemy of the people. You know, he's basically put a target almost literally on people's backs. He's, you know, been responsible for home addresses getting out of reporters and having their lives threatened. It's, you know, it's not funny. It's something that is a really serious issue. Now, you know, you could say that it's an act of rebellion to just be there in his face, because there was a point where Wolf Blitzer was basically listing all these stories that people were winning awards for, and most of the stories were basically revealing the corruption of Trump. And just saying all that while he's sitting right there, and then on top of that, having those reporters come up to get their awards, and then basically Trump stands up and shakes their hand and they say something to him. I wish I could see what they were saying. Looked like they were saying something cutting. I don't know. Maybe they weren't. But at least the opportunity is there for somebody to say, you know what, I'm not afraid to be here. I'm not afraid to you know, be right next to you. So there's something in that, but I hear your point loud and clear, Kyle, as far as just the whole thing being kind of it makes you squirm.
Yeah, just the nature of the stuff at play and the fact that really it was just his legal machinations that eliminated the sort of consequences that ordinarily you would expect in these kind of cases. It's just all paid off. So it really is an insult, I think, to public interest reporting and the kind of the work that they're doing. It just undermines it, I think. It looks as though it's all sort of fun and games when much of this is quite serious.
So ketchup packets and plastic forks might not necessarily be automatically available with your takeout orders. If you're in East Hampton, Quogue, Sag Harbor, Sagaponack, this is the one I can never say, Sagaponack. Yeah, that's the weird one. And Southampton. They're all participating in an initiative which encourages, and in some cases requires, restaurants and delis to provide utensils, napkins, straws, and condiment packets only when customers request them. We're not trying to make it so people can't eat the food that they order if they need it, but we're trying to encourage restaurants and people to be aware of not taking something they don't need. That's according to Sheila Pfeiffer, who is the chairwoman of Southampton Village's Environmental and Sustainability Committee. The fact that they have that committee is something worth noting. That campaign is backed by the Eastern Long Island chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation. Do you know about them? You've heard of them?
Oh, yeah. They're like a big organization.
I've never heard of them before. Wow. Mm-hmm. Surf Rider Foundation. Are they surfers?
Not explicitly. I mean, yeah, they are, but they're more interest. Their mission is more towards beach cleanups and like waterways.
Environmental advocacy group. And okay, this is great. This is what I'm talking about when I say cool things are happening out east. With more than 1,000 miles of shoreline in Suffolk County alone, advocates say even small reductions in single-use plastics can help protect the East End's beaches, bays, and marine life. And if you don't know this, plastic is the most common form of marine debris. It can have detrimental effects on marine ecosystems. Environmental researchers estimate between 5 million and 12 million metric tons of plastic enter the world's oceans each year. So, good on the East End for doing something about it, or starting to do something about it.
Yeah, now you have to grab ketchup packets on your own.
And out in South Old Town, that's in the northern North Fork, and also, fun fact, Fisher's Island, which is actually closer to Connecticut, that's part of South Old Town. The police there, South Old Police, and they're a real thing, so, you know, make sure you treat them with the respect they deserve. Because
they ban scooters.
They basically, I don't think there's Suffolk County cops out there. I think there's only South Old cops, which is, different. We have Brookhaven cops here. That's, the town versus the county. But you see Suffolk County more than you see anyone else. Anyway, South Old Town Police are investigating several acts of vandalism targeting Flock license plate reader cameras.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah. Now, I'm not into vandalism, but sometimes vandalism is called for. And when you have all these devices everywhere spying on you for no good reason, other than other people thinking it's a good reason for them to have your information, people have to speak out in one form or another. Now, over the Independence Day weekend, a camera in Greenport was found with its wires ripped out and splashed with paint. Make a production of it. You don't have to just, destroy it, but throw paint on it as well. Why not? Another Greenport camera was splashed with paint, and a camera in Peconic was found turned away from traffic. Okay, that shouldn't even be on the list. I'm sorry. That's not vandalism. They just turned it away.
It could have been the wind.
That's the mildest form of vandalism I've ever heard, just turning something away. Okay, fine. I wonder what the penalty for that is. On Monday, one of the Greenport cameras mounted on a small pole at the edge of the road was struck by a vehicle and destroyed. Well, that could just be bad driving, couldn't it? You never know. I think they're certainly intentional That's according to South Old Town Police Chief Steve Grattan. These cameras are the center of controversy all across the U.S. And yes, Police Chief Grattan, you are getting that absolutely correct, because all over the country, people are lashing out at these things.
This guy's good.
He gets it.
He's good.
No, he's got his finger on the pulse of the nation.
He is like, that is a professional.
Yeah, no,
he's tapped in.
You want to go out there and shake his hand? I mean,
yeah,
we can do that. It's nearby.
Yeah.
Flock cameras have faced, by the way, it's spelled F-L-O-C-K. All right, in case you haven't heard of them before. Flock cameras have faced growing scrutiny from residents and civil liberties groups over concerns that the technology could enable broad tracking of people's movements. Could enable? That's what they're designed to do. That's what they're for. Yes, they could enable broad tracking of people's movements, as they are built for, and could be abused by those with access to their data. Because, well, that doesn't happen very often, does it? Give somebody a whole lot of data and see if they abuse it. Happens every damn time. The cameras are made by a company called Flock Safety. Just stick safety on the end of something controversial. It just makes it seem so much nicer. Flock Safety. They capture images of passing vehicle license plates. They collect information about the vehicles using an AI-powered software. They make that information available in a searchable database to the company's customers, which include police departments and businesses. And if you're a decent hacker, you can find them yourselves with default passwords and spy on all kinds of people yourself. And then you are labeled the problem, not the people doing it, but the people who discover it. Yeah. Southold began using the technology after the Suffolk County Sheriff's Office provided 8 cameras in the fall of 2022. Oh, and by the way, we're paying for these things too. Yeah, they're not just buying them on their own dime. The town later added 3 more cameras using a law enforcement technology grant. Law enforcement agencies in Suffolk have sought to expand the use of Flock cameras in recent years to assist in crime solving on the East End. That's according to Newsday. The chief said Southold Town police officers have used the cameras to aid in criminal investigations and missing persons cases. He noted that earlier this year, the department used the technology to locate a 79-year-old Orient woman with dementia who was missing and had traveled out of state. Yeah, you can justify this. You can say that, it can do good things. Absolutely. But it's not being done with our permission. There is so much private information that is being stored in places where it's not safe, not protected. And we don't know that our movements, no matter where we go, are being tracked. This would have been a nightmare scenario as little as 20 years ago. And now it's just accept it. And we use justification that, we saved somebody with dementia. No indication you wouldn't have found somebody without a camera. There's all kinds of ways of preventing crime that don't involve spying on everybody. And keep in mind, that's everybody. Everybody has their data analyzed. And it's 1984. It really is. Now, the American Civil Liberties Union has argued that Flock's practices amount to an invasion of privacy, and has encouraged people to advocate for the camera's removal. The organization has said most vehicles captured by the systems are not connected to criminal activity and that the data collected could be abused. I'd go stronger. I'd say the vast majority of vehicles connected to the systems captured by the systems are not connected to criminal activity and that the data collected will be abused. Online activists have created efforts such as DFLOCK, a project that maps camera locations and campaigns against the technology's expansion. There's one at Stony Brook, isn't there?
There are 4 at Stony Brook.
On campus?
Yes.
Wow.
There's also 4 in the Home Depot parking lot.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. The campus, I could at least follow their logic. And we have to keep an eye on students or
I'm just saying, whatnot. I was looking around at the map.
Home Depot parking lot? Why do they need 4 of them? Why do they
those like little mobile solar like surveillance things?
Oh, those things that yell at you when you park next to them? I hate those.
Yeah, they're stupid. Helpful, I guess, for these companies. But I don't know if it's that necessarily, but it looks like exactly where those would be. But on Stony Brook's campus, I think there's either, I don't think they're mobile. They might be built into something. But I believe there's at least 2 or 4 of them that are on campus or near campus. but I could be off. I was just looking at the map briefly.
Look, you know, I don't know what students are into these days. You know, they have an ROTC office on campus now. I mean, you know, people in the 60s and 70s would think they were in, you know, another dimension to even consider Stony Brook having something like that. So, you know, things have changed, and I recognize that. So maybe students are embracing them. Maybe it's a student project to have flock cameras recording license plates and people and whatnot and
well,
sharing
we don't know.
All the data.
We don't know.
And we're admitting our ignorance. We don't know why there are flock cameras on campus. But if that's not the case, if students have not demanded these cameras to be there watching them all the time, maybe they should have a say.
Well, yeah. And like other, I think students and people in the neighborhood, community members, look up your favorite place, like places you hang out, you know, places you spend your money and you bring friends and family, or that, you know, do you feel safer in those places? Do you think places with this stuff are helping those areas from what you know of the kinds of things that happen there, or incidents and the like? It stands to reason, if you don't have DFLOC or these things that show you that, you can't be informed. You can't be an informed participant or pedestrian, even, you know, knowing what's going on, and that that if something does happen in a certain area, that you actually have recourse in that. I don't know. I mean, it's just that thing of like, it's implemented and people don't really get buy-in. If they know that there's, you know, you can do this type of thing, if you need a, you know, they're not enrolled in the program and like feel like they have a say and like a stake in it. So, and I think these expectations that people won't react, like the streets are wild, you know, stuff happens out there. So you're just going to put up these things. I mean,
there were 200 vehicles on the Wisconsin Highway over the weekend, taking over the highway, and a lot of people got arrested.
That's what I mean. Like, if
you didn't need a camera for that.
I was just thinking when you were reading this, like, imagine they all go down at once, like completely destroyed, and your highways are taken over all at once. Yeah. Like, that's the kind of synchronization and orchestration that is possible in a network society. So, you know, your alarm at this, you know, sporadic and, you know, specific cases, you might want to revisit if you have community buy-in.
Yes.
And, yes. And collectively in larger regional, settings, I mean, if people in New York City were, uncomfortable with the kind of surveillance that the NYPD implements, those things would come down too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more people in New York City than there are.
Stop and frisk ended.
Absolutely. I'm also thinking of speed or red light cameras. There are plenty.
Okay, that's a great example. Here in Suffolk County, basically people demanded red light cameras not be there, and they're still there, but they're not being used.
And prior to that, I remember stories from out west, like Arizona specifically, where they were just dismantling them.
Mm-hmm.
People out there love their cars. They were mad at these cameras. I don't know what it is, but they destroyed them and said, no mas.
It's like, harder to argue against red light cameras because, you know, they're catching people running red lights. I can understand that, but there are abuses again. It wasn't you know, basically gone through the proper channels, and there are other ways of dealing with this. So you have to listen to the people. You have to respect the wishes of the people. Do they want this? And, you know, most times when something like this does become normal, it's because the authorities do it anyway, and they just wait for people to get used to it. You know, I remember when I went to school here at Stony Brook, whenever there was a policy change, whether it was they wouldn't allow cooking in the dormitories, or they started charging for parking or things like that, they would always implement it quietly over the summer when nobody was around. So then, you know, when the new school year began, well, a quarter of the students are new because, you know, it's a 4-year college and the first year is new people. They don't know any different, so they assume that's normal. The seniors don't really care. They're on their way out. And basically, that's how you do it. That's how you make something become normal. Why am I telling people this? Anyway, the ACLU also has raised concerns about law enforcement agencies sharing data collected by FLOC with federal agents for civil immigration enforcement. Here's where the East End comes in again, because East Hampton Village specifically prohibited the use of its flock cameras for that purpose earlier this year. Now, that led to corrupt Representative LaLota threatening them by withholding all the money they were entitled to if they didn't shape up and start cooperating with ICE. They refused. But this is the kind of thing it leads to. You see the abuse. They want to use flock cameras to help ICE with their raids. And we've all seen what happens with their raids and how...
The one where they shoot Americans?
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter what the race of the people, the nationality of people they shoot. They shouldn't be shooting anybody. And we should know who they are. We should have a full listing of who these people are because they are not trained. They're maniacs running around with guns. And they have not been checked out. It's like you know, in Nassau County, where the county executive there, Bruce Blakeman, was deputizing people just because he wanted more people with guns, like running around doing what he thought was his job. Oh, okay. So that's what's going on the East End. All so, yeah. kinds of fun stuff.
Flock's not your friend.
No. Speaking of lunacy, though. You hear about this with the Smithsonian? Trump wants to put up signs basically correcting what he calls inaccurate information. In other words, he wants there to be like a government warning label outside the Smithsonian, or maybe inside the Smithsonian, basically saying that that what you see in here, inside the Smithsonian, is not necessarily true, and that it was put together by people who don't care about representing the truth. It's ridiculous, and so of course people are reacting against it. There was a protest recently. Teachers were protesting outside, saying our history doesn't need a government warning label. Black lives and Black history matters. Local history teachers were basically protesting outside the Smithsonian Museum of American History. That's in reaction to Trump's executive order. It's an executive order demanding signs outside the museum that correct what he called inaccurate information without giving any specifics, because he never does that. He ordered the signs be placed on Friday. As of yesterday, no signs have been placed. But, you know, I got to tell you, if signs like that go up, it's the patriotic duty of every American to tear them down, because that kind of nonsense should not stand, not without any kind of pushback. I mean, can you imagine having a museum, having a sign like that outside saying this museum is not real, it's not representing the truth? Who are you to say this? Who are you to say that because you don't like the history of this country, specifically slavery, that you get to rewrite it? I mean, a lot of people are telling Trump he can do that. And that's the thing, you know, he does these crazy things. Like, you know, we saw a piece by John Oliver on Sunday. In fact, there are pieces everywhere, but this is one of them, concerning the amount of money that Trump and his family have bilked people out of through cryptocurrency. Yeah, and they've made billions of dollars, and people have lost billions of dollars. And it's not just there. It's in so many other fields that they have ripped people off and made a ton of money, you know, like corrupt leaders have done for all time. But you realize that he just gets away with it because nobody is willing to prosecute him. Nobody will do it. The FBI will not do it. Anyone in the Justice Department? No. You know, they tried that once. They tried it, and he got reelected. And then he went after them. And, you know, the right thing to do would be to double down and to actually have it out like they would in other countries. We, unfortunately, and we've talked about this earlier with journalism, we don't really have the guts we need. You know, some of us do. Some of us show it sometimes, but we need to show it all the time. We need to always be on duty. We need to always be fighting and ready for this nonsense to happen, ready for us to be lied to and stolen from and basically attacked and threatened. That is real. That is happening. That is happening to a lot of people. And we need to act like it's the threat it is and not just, you know, a headline for a little while and then we move on to something else.
Yeah, like what's happening over in Albania?
Oh, have I'm you, glad you mentioned Albania.
Do you have any stories sort of pointing that out?
Well,
because they've got some gumption, right? Like a little spirit.
Can I just make a stop in Penn Station first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, on the way to Albania, let's stop at Penn Station. Because apparently there is a move, even though it hasn't been said in words yet, there's a move to rename Penn Station Trump Station. Now, can you believe that? Can you believe the chutzpah? Well, okay, so we're okay, though. We're fine, because we got Senator Chuck Schumer on our side. And he says he will block any attempt by the White House to rename Penn Station after President Donald Trump. He has a letter pre-written.
Was he wearing a hockey mask?
That I don't know. But he has a letter already written, and he will send that letter if it comes down to it. So fear not, New Yorkers. Chuck Schumer's on our side. The Senate Minority Leader's vow Sunday came after U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, who, by the way, he gets half of what he says right. You know, he's into trains. He knows why we don't have high-speed rail in this country, because, you know, right away and straight lines that you have in Europe. Yeah, you know, at least he knows something about it. But he's still part of the cult, you know? He's still got that derangement syndrome. Yeah, because you guys are the ones that are deranged.
Well, he's working in some interesting parameters.
Very much.
But hopefully our roads are slightly better than Albania's.
He's playing to the opposite field.
Yeah.
In a different dimension. Okay. So Sean Duffy sent a letter to congressional leaders outlining various transportation priorities held by the Trump administration, including for the ongoing $8 billion redevelopment of Penn Station. Among those priorities, Duffy wrote, is to direct Amtrak to rename New York Penn Station. It's just kind of thrown in there. Wow, interesting. What would you rename it, I wonder? What could it possibly be? Well, although Duffy's letter didn't specify what name would be chosen for a rebranded Penn Station, Schumer said, it doesn't have to. We know what it is. The administration wants Donald Trump's name on that station. You know, he already has an airport named after him in Florida. They renamed an airport. There are people who are so upset now when they find out they're flying into Trump. You know, and they've demanded refunds. And there was even a story going around, I think it was United Airlines, was reported as saying they'd give refunds to anybody who didn't want to fly into that airport. And then there was another story saying, no, they didn't say that. So nobody knows what's going on. But I would never fly into anything with his name, that's for sure. This could happen. And New Yorkers have to be prepared for it. And similar to the signs outside the Smithsonian, you need to take action. And any sign that says Trump Station needs to immediately be defaced, destroyed, removed, whatever. It's our station. It's our city. And we cannot let names of fascist leaders take over. And next thing you know, there'll be statues and all kinds of horrible. This is the United States of America. I don't recognize it.
Doesn't he realize that the more things you put your name on with that don't have the support, the more surfaces and places you're creating to have your name ripped off?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
like it will be completely removed. This is what I like. Look to history. People that do this en masse to everything indiscriminately because of their ego don't tend to stay on those fixtures and those buildings. In fact, it's the first things that people reach for to show that things are going to change, whether the bearer of that name likes it or not.
Very true. That's exactly what happens. They always tear down the statues and remove the names when people fall into disfavor. I just wonder why it's taking so long for him to fall. I guess people are just afraid. People are just constantly afraid. But, you know, you got to look at the corruption. You got to look at what we're dealing with today. Trump told a crowd in Michigan the White House has ordered 250 Cadillac Escalades, the flagship sport utility vehicle in the luxury auto brand's lineup, for his presidential motorcade. 250, the one and only Escalade. You know, we ordered 250. We ordered 250. We look sharp in those Escalades. That's our money. You know, each one of those is $125,000. 250, do the math. It's what, $30 million or something? Yeah, our guys are very spoiled. They're very spoiled. They like the Escalade, so do I. This is the kind of thing that happens every day. And this is the kind of thing that corrupt leaders have done.
I heard a lot of this in the speech about, you know, the big threat is communism. But the real threat, I think, to the capitalist model, from my reading of Wikipedia, is monopolistic tendencies mm-hmm. and corruption. Both.
Yeah.
Those two things. I mean, people, you know, Cory Doctorow, many different people have pointed this out, you know, in sort of the sense of, you know, not big fans of it, but it's just an obvious fact, and that you project or like deflect and blame it on your opponents is itself, I think, a red flag, a sign of that insecurity or fascist tendency to try to misplace the actual real threat to this system.
Well, you know, he's trying to resurrect the Red Scare of the 1950s.
Oh, totally.
Because that's all they have. That's all they can think of. They have no imagination whatsoever. And so, you know, they're pointing at people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and even Zoran Mondani as the biggest threat. And these are some of the most popular people out there. They get along with individual people, even people that disagree with them. Hell, Mondani gets along with Trump. He's able to, like, you know, calm him down. It's you know, something I've never seen before. And this past week, in fact, Mondani really got some attention by saying he wanted to have Benjamin Netanyahu arrested when he comes to New York, if he comes to New York. And that is incredible. That shows guts. That shows, you know, a bit of fortitude and you know, interest in justice and all that kind of thing. Of course, you know, doesn't really have the authority to do it, unfortunately. He realizes that. He's not, you know, talking fantasy. But the important thing is he's saying it out loud, saying this guy is a war criminal. This guy deserves to be imprisoned. And somebody who has the authority needs to do it. And, you know, maybe he can't actually arrest him. Maybe New Yorkers can't throw this guy in prison. But we can certainly make his life as uncomfortable as possible when he is in our city. And that is important. That's important to do that. The guy is a war criminal. The guy has led a genocide. The guy is destroying Israel and is responsible for all kinds of hatred on all sides. Because when you have people like this running countries, all sorts of ugliness becomes possible. We can go into hours and hours of details as to what that means. But I think it's great when somebody shows the courage to speak their mind, despite the political consequences, because Democrats are freaking out over this. They need to get their act together because, yeah, you know, there are a lot of people in your camp that believe Netanyahu should be imprisoned at the very least. And if you want them to vote for your candidates who might not agree with that, you have to at least respect that opinion. Because, you know, Republicans, that's the other side. So maybe that's the side you're more comfortable with. Anyway, we're still trying to get to Albania. I'm sorry about that. So in Albania, there is this controversy going on. And guess who it has to do with? It has to do with the Trump family. They are, I don't know, is this a disease or something? They are constructing a luxury resort in Albania. Everywhere they go, they have to construct a luxury resort. I've seen luxury resorts. They are the most boring places ever. They depress me. They're terrible, terrible places. I mean, we're talking about when we travel, we always go down the dirtiest street and just find our way. And
no, it's not necessarily dirty.
In their eyes, it would be.
Right. It would be judged to be that. But it's that you are making things, you know, traveling in a way that's comfortable and not completely constructed and managed the whole time. And these resorts are, they capture you, and then that's how even some of them turn into like pitches to become, you know, members or the dreaded timeshare and stuff like that. Like, it's a whole industry, and people, I'm astonished. I mean, second, I guess, only to cruise ships, at what people will pay to be confined, contained,
yes,
removed from any kind of public services, local culture and life that isn't orchestrated and performed.
You can't tell you in a foreign country. You could be in Atlantic City.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. Like, all the amenities really are just ways for you to experience what you could experience at home. You're just not at home, and have to navigate only what's available through their buffet or whatever you have.
Anyway, to get to this specific point, it's a 4.5 billion euro resort. It was first proposed 2 years ago, 2024, by Jared Kushner, the son-in-law of Trump. Yeah, and Ivanka Trump, his wife and daughter of Trump, described the property as including 5 miles of beachfront directly across from the island, with a beautiful peninsula with a lagoon on one side, the ocean on the other. And you know what, Ivanka? It belongs to Albania, not you. And that's why people are angry, because you come into their country and start building for yourself and destroying the habitat. Weeks of public anger have intensified, and that didn't get any better when barbed wire and private security appeared around the proposed development. Those demonstrations have since become nightly protests, and have led to clashes outside Parliament in Tirana, the capital city. Folks, why is Albania protesting Trump more than we are? I don't get that. I mean, yeah, they probably have more experience with protesting corrupt governments. But for God's sake, do we have to look to foreign nations on how to deal with our own mess?
It's because we're fed and happy and comfortable. I mean, most of us on par with the rest of the world, and in some ways distracted, and can, you know, ignore it or wait it out or let other people deal with it. But do you understand that that is public pressure? That the person that is negotiating with Trump, whatever position they are, I don't even know his name or their name or their relative experience or authority in whatever office, but whoever is bringing this upon Albania is going to have to make a choice between pursuing this, and if they haven't already been a casualty of it, and the Trump family is just escalating through their political and bureaucratic hierarchies to claim this property. But the result is, any one or all of those individuals will have to face either losing whatever windfall this deal would have been, or the wrath of the public. And the wrath of the public continues and could be the very end of their career.
Right.
At the minimum. So that's the choice. And what our politicians don't understand is that we have the very same power. That's how it works.
Well, our people don't understand that either, it feels like.
No, but they're only emboldening the people that should have that concern, which is our elected officials. If this was happened with any regularity to any extent, and we weren't so distracted and, sleepy, I guess, if we woke up to this power and actually made some demands of officials, whether they're our party or not, the people that represent us, and put the motivation, so to speak, let me be pleasant, at their feet in the form of outcry, we might actually have a little bit more action, a little more product of their labors in Congress.
Don't say woke up, because woke is a bad word. And if you say woke, then people turn off to it and think that Trump is right. And yeah, it's the whole thing is crazy. The whole thing is insane. Marine biologist and Eco Albania head Olsi Nika called what is happening an absolute biodiversity massacre. Recovery can be difficult or impossible once dunes are flattened and breeding areas are disrupted. Healthy coastal ecosystems can support tourism, fisheries, flood protection, and local identity. The protesters' anger now also reflects wider concerns about corruption and transparency, along with a planned, get this, 4 million euro public subsidy for a Kanye West concert in Tirana. Don't you love how they all gather together with their orgy of corruption and just not caring about individual people? Well, you know, we've been to Albania. Kyle and I spent some time there. I got to tell you, people there are individuals, and they understand a thing or two about justice, and they've worked long and hard to build what they have now. And their entire government could fall because of this Trump resort that is being forced down the throats of people there. Maybe we need to look to the people in Albania as inspiration for solutions for our own country. You know, it would be nice. It would be very nice.
Yeah, or your neighborhood data center project. There's a lot of anger out there, and those are great examples.
Well, we could go on for hours and hours, but this is all the time we have. This has been Off the Wall. You can write to us, otw at 2600.com. That's 2600.com. And we will keep looking for all kinds of other interesting items to discuss.
Can
in future
I light
weeks.
This now?
Not in this room, you can't.
Okay, I'll step outside.
We'll be back next week. Stay awake, stay alert, stay safe. Good night.
Bye.